Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the World of Women Create. Hello, and welcome to the World of Women Create podcast. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am here today with Abby Glassenberg, who is the co-founder and president of the Craft Industry Alliance, the trade association for the crafts industry. Abby is a sewing pattern designer, a craft book author, teacher, and writer. She's the author of 3 sewing books, and she lives in Wellesley, Massachusetts, with her husband and 3 children. Welcome, Abby.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, we are thrilled to have you. So I want to jump right in. I have many questions for you today, but how did you come to found the Trade Association, the Craft Industry Alliance? How did this come about?
Good question. It really came about as an evolution of my craft blog. So I had a blog for a very long time, started in 2005. It's still called While She Naps. And it was sort of originated as a way to document the things that I was making while our first child was napping when she was an infant. So I was doing all kinds of different things on the blog, but eventually it sort of evolved into sewing primarily and sewing dolls and toys, which is what I love to do. But anyway, through that whole process, and it was a lot of great opportunities came my way through the blog, I also began to learn about the business side of the craft industry, which I think, frankly, as a consumer, sometimes is totally invisible. And it certainly was for me as a craft consumer until I wrote some books and then got some licensing deals and then went to a trade show and started to see, oh, wait, there's a whole flip side of this universe that's fascinating. And it was through that experience that I came to see that we as an industry really needed a trade association that was modern, that was accessible to everyone, that was primarily online, and that would provide ongoing professional education, that would provide news coverage and networking opportunities. And so that was the genesis of Craft Industry Alliance.
Well, going to your website, it's wonderful. It's a hub for its resources, its webinars. You've got job opportunities. You have pretty much everything. How did it look when you started in 2015 versus today?
I started Craft Industry Alliance with Kristen Link, who was also a sewing blogger. She had a very popular contributor blog called Sew Mama Sew that some listeners may remember. And so we both came from a sewing background. Hers more quilting and mine a little bit more on dolls and toys, but our network was really very much the sewing side of the crafts industry. And so the first members who joined Craft Industry Alliance were people from the quilting and sewing world. And our content originally also was somewhat more focused toward that audience. And so over time, it has, you know, evolved to be relevant to all craft sectors. And that's been a really interesting and long learning curve for me. So I set about having to learn about yarn and figure out what all of these terms meant and what was important to people who worked in the yarn world, people who were spinning yarn, dyeing yarn, weaving, knitting, and crocheting. So that was a long journey. And then I also needed to learn about beading and people who make jewelry and what was important to them. And then also about scrapbooking and mixed media. So all of these craft sectors are similar in the biggest way, which is that we all create products and services that help people express themselves creatively in their free time. And so in that way, we're all super similar. But there are specific things that are really important to people who own businesses in one sector or another. And so as I've learned those different things, and I'm still learning, but it's very interesting, we've done a better job at attracting members from all of the different sectors.
And you have about 2,000 members, is this true?
That's right, just over 2,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And give me a sense, are they primarily based in the U.S.?
Yes, they are primarily based in the U.S. because we're primarily based in the U.S. But we have a pretty strong sector in Canada and in the U.K. and Australia, with some members scattered in other parts of the world. We have a member who's in the Bahamas. We've got a member in France. So, you know, we've got a few scattered in other parts of the world. But I would say primarily, yeah, it is very US focused because that's where we are. And so that's, I guess, what our content is most relevant to somebody who lives in the US.
And how do they find you, especially the people who don't live in the US? How do they know of your existence and sign up to join you?
Good question. So it's, you know, mainly through news coverage. We are the B2B trade magazine, which is all digital. So digital magazine for the industry. And I really believe in the power of news coverage. I felt like the other industries, the lingerie industry, the automotive industry, all industries that you can think of have a very, you know, have a strong B2B news magazine that covers the news that's relevant to those sectors. So mergers and acquisitions and trends and what's happening, new hires, all that stuff that's happening in those sectors. And Kraft really didn't have one. We had some magazines that were very specific to yarn, for example, but there really wasn't a strong B2B news outlet. And so for us, that was a hugely important piece. And so we pay writers, we have a large freelance pool, and we have many professional reporters in that pool. And so we report the news. And when things happen, and I can give you like an example. So when Bead and Button magazine and show closed down, the people who loved that magazine and who looked forward to that show and needed that show for their business to survive and thrive were devastated. We covered that on our website. And so all the people for whom that was really important saw some sort of link from Facebook or from Instagram, somebody shared it or whatever. They came to the site, they read the coverage, maybe they left a comment. It has hundreds of comments on that post. People who didn't realize it closed, but then 2 years later are like, hey, I wanted to go to that. Or what happened to my magazine? Google it, they find it. And then when you're on the site, there is a pop-up that asks you whether you would like to join our email list. And so after you join our email list, then every week on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, you get an email from us that's a roundup of craft industry news of the week. People love that newsletter. We have almost 20,000 people on that list. And in that newsletter, there's a section that's exclusive to members of live events that we're hosting, access to really interesting people. Eventually, some number of those people who have come through a news article that was relevant to them, stayed for the newsletter, are then convinced that they should definitely attend this upcoming live event and become a member. So that's sort of how the funnel works.
So you mentioned having a large pool of writers, but tell me, do you have much of a team?
I actually have a great team. I am the only full-time person who works for Kraft Industry Alliance, but we have a wonderful team. We have a director of operations who does so much behind the scenes. You may not see Kate in front of the scenes, but she's definitely behind the scenes doing so much there. We have a director of diversity and inclusion who's amazing and incredibly helpful. We have a graphic designer on our team. We have someone who manages our private Facebook group. We have someone who does our Instagram for us. We just hired someone who's managing our Pinterest. So We do have a variety of contractors, and I should mention Stephanie, who does member engagement. So we do have a variety of contractors and then two other part-time employees, which are Kate and Stephanie. So I couldn't do it without them. The ideas that they bring to the table and their work ethic is extraordinary. So I would definitely give them huge credit for helping me. I will say in May of 2019, Kristen left the organization for personal reasons. And so I ended up buying out her 50% share. And so accidentally becoming the solo leader, which was not my intention and was actually really scary and something that took me a long time to figure out how I felt about that. I did get some executive coaching, which was incredibly helpful. And so, you know, I feel more comfortable in that role now, but I definitely also like to be behind the scenes myself as much as possible so that the organization really is about the members.
You have a really wonderful and successful podcast, and you've done probably a couple hundred episodes at this point. So I want to know more about that. How did you start the podcast? How do you find your guests? How do you tap into timely topics?
Yeah, so I started the podcast by accident, again, as an evolution of my blog. Back in 2013, I've been an Etsy seller since Etsy was in beta. So I started my Etsy shop in, I should go back to July of 2005. So I've been an Etsy seller for a very long time, and I always follow Etsy's developments, which are in and of themselves really interesting. But anyway, back in 2013, Etsy decided to change their definition of handmade to include production partners. And they hosted, Chad Dickerson was the CEO at that time, and he hosted a online town hall meeting. So I tuned in, watched it from home, and then I wrote a blog post detailing what it was all about. And then the next morning, someone from Etsy reached out to me and said, you know, we read your blog post and we'd love to chat with you further. And I thought, well, I don't really have anything to chat with them about, but if we could record the conversation and I could post the recording, then it would certainly be worthwhile. So I asked her, thinking she would absolutely be like, no. And she said, yes. So I recorded a conversation the day after that announcement had come out with Vanessa Bertozzi, who used to work at Etsy, was there at that time, about this big change. And I recorded it with the microphone built into my MacBook Air with no headphones, no theme music. I had no audio host, nothing. I just recorded this random piece of audio, figured out how to host an MP3 and put it on my blog. And it got 8,000 downloads in the first 24 hours. And I was like, wow, that was really cool. And so I recorded a few other ones later in that fall. And I thought, this is really interesting and I like doing it. So in January of 2014, I decided, okay, we have a podcast. So we need theme music, we need a schedule, we need a format. So I kind of came up with all of that. So the show comes out the first and third Monday of the month. I could not do a weekly show. I have three children. And at that time they were little, there was just no way. Once I start something, I will stick to it forever. That's just a personality trait, for better or for worse. So I knew I needed something sustainable. And so many people who start a podcast don't continue. And I knew that. So I actually completely stole the format from Mark Frauenfelder from Boing Boing, whose podcast is no longer, but I used to always listen to. And he would have his guests give recommendations toward the end of the show of things that they were enjoying. And it literally could be anything that they just liked and they would recommend. I bought so many things from that show because I was like, oh, that's a good book order. Like all these things I didn't know about. So I stole that format. So at the end of every show, there's recommendations from the guests. I used to have two guests at a time, but that got to be a lot. So now it's one guest at a time. And honestly, it's given me an excuse to call up everybody I've ever wanted to talk to and talk to them for an hour. And that, from a journalist perspective, is fabulous. From a network perspective, it's also been good, although that was certainly wasn't the reason I started it, but that's been a really interesting these people become people that I can call back later and ask them when things happen, what do you think about this? Tell me, explain, what is this all about? So it's been great in that way. But I will say having a podcast is a lot of work and continues to be a lot of work. So we are at episode 235 at the moment. I did move everything over from my blog, which is where the podcast obviously originated, when Craft Industry Alliance launched and when Kristen moved on. I then moved my personal newsletter and my personal blog, my personal podcast over. So the Craft Industry Alliance newsletter is an iteration of my own newsletter, and the Craft Industry Alliance podcast is my podcast. So if you listen to the first 140 episodes or something, the intro will tell you that it's the Walshy Knops podcast, and then I just moved it over. So, but otherwise, it's exactly the same.
I do want to back up just a little bit and talk about earlier in your life. I read that you do have an undergraduate degree in history from Johns Hopkins and a master's degree in education from Harvard, and you were a middle school teacher. You taught for Teach for America and also Newton Public Schools, closer to where you live now. I have tremendous respect for teachers. How did you move from that career into what you're doing today?
Yeah, I was in Teach for America. I taught 5th through 8th grade French and social studies in the Mississippi Delta for 2 years in Greenwood, Mississippi, which is really a transformative experience in my life. This was before people had the internet. So I was in the Delta, which is incredibly rural, and met some incredible people. And it was really a great experience in my life. And then when I came up to Boston, I came here to go to grad school, as you mentioned, worked for a nonprofit as an education director for 2 years, and then taught in the Newton Public Schools, taught social studies. And the Newton Public Schools, if people aren't familiar with Newton, Massachusetts, it's this incredibly well-resourced place. So truly alpha to omega from the Delta and to Newton. So really different sort of pictures of public school in America, and same, you know, middle school. That was fascinating as well. And I do really love education. I love education theory. I love teaching. I had wanted to be a teacher since I was a child. That was always my goal in life, to become a teacher. So I did leave the classroom, which was always our plan in our family when I had our first daughter. She was born in 2004, in March of 2004. So we knew we wanted to have more children. And honestly, on a teacher's salary, it doesn't make sense to have 3 kids and go back to the classroom, sadly. And so that was always the plan. And and then I just started blogging when she was a baby, which grew into this whole other career. And so in 2024, I will have been home doing this for 20 years, which is crazy.
I want to talk about, we're already in February, but I want to talk about 2023 for the Craft Industry Alliance. I believe you started your mastermind groups in January. I'd love to know more about those.
Yeah, this is a great addition to our offerings, I feel like. So I actually kind of discovered mastermind groups, I think just reading and talking to people. But essentially, if you're not familiar with them, they're small groups of peers, not competitors, but peers who are around the same level of experience, kind of businesses that are sort of at the same stage, who want to meet together to work on accountability, making progress toward their goals, maybe studying a particular topic like branding, for example, or leadership, and kind of hold each other accountable. So I started my own mastermind group just by finding other people who owned membership sites. So Craft Industry Alliance is, in its essence, a membership site. And so I'm in a few Facebook groups of other people who have membership sites. And I just asked people who might want to be in a mastermind group, you know, who are at a similar level that I was, found a bunch of women, and we have been in our mastermind group for 2.5 years now. And we just meet every other week on Zoom, and it's been fabulous. We have somebody in there who runs a membership site for actuaries and one for fiction writers. And it's so interesting to hear from everybody about what they're doing. We all have a lot in common and a lot that's completely different. So I could see how beneficial it was for me. And I thought it would be a really good addition to Craft Industry Alliance's offerings. So the way that they work is it is an additional cost, although we try to keep it really affordable. So it's $38, which is hopefully affordable for most people. And we definitely felt like if you pay a little, you're more committed. So that was really the reasoning behind that. And then you fill out a pretty extensive survey about yourself and your business, about how many employees you have, whether this is your side hustle, your part-time job, your full-time job, what your goals are. You pick a topic you want to focus on. You tell us what industry you're in, et cetera. And then we have a custom Airtable that we built that helps to sort everybody. Also, by what times you're available, there's all of these factors. It's quite complicated. But with this Airtable, it actually makes it a little bit easier. So me and Kate, my operations manager, go through. We sort everybody into these groups. So the groups are between 4 and 6 people. And we have like an opening session together, all together on Zoom. And then we also provide you with a extensive Google Doc for tracking your meetings and your goals and resources that you're sharing with one another. And then we kind of let you go on your own. You organize, you know, okay, we are all free this day at this time, and set up meetings. We ask the groups to meet every other week for an hour virtually. And it's a 3-month commitment. We have groups, however, who started in our very first cohort who still meet and love each other so much. And it's like, they just, it's great. Honestly, we have some groups that totally implode. Like they just, for whatever reason, do not gel. And I've come to understand that that's just human nature. There are some groups that don't gel. And it is peer led. And so because of that, you know, you're talking to one another and learning from one another. There's not an expert in the room who's guiding the group. We did think about doing that, and it's not off the table for the future, but the price point for that's going to be much higher, which makes it a little harder to access for everybody. And I really want this sort of experience to be as accessible as possible. So right now they're peer-led, and I think there is actually a lot of value in, you know, in being in a peer-led group. So that's how they work.
And one person doesn't take the lead just to make sure logistically everyone's there or follow up.
Yeah, we suggest that somebody kind of be the timekeeper and the scheduler. For my mastermind group, it's me. So, but literally I just am like, here's the Zoom link, guys. See you next week. Or we're not meeting this week because it's Christmas, or, you know, but other than that, like it's not a huge or heavy lift. And once we all get on Zoom together, I'm certainly not the leader of our group. It's just, I just am like the provider of the logistics. So,
and you talk about the group that's been meeting since the first cohort. And when was that?
I believe the first cohort was a little over a year ago. So I think this is our third run of the program. I could be wrong, but I think that's right.
So they continue to work together.
It was a 3-month commitment, but they're just, you know, they just, and they'll email me and be like, we love each other so much, and it's great. So, I would say there's probably from each cohort that we do, there's probably 2 or 3 groups that are just committed like that.
And these groups, they're groups of peers, but they're geographically diverse. These are people located in all different parts of the country.
Yeah. Right? As long as the time zone works for them. Yeah, absolutely.
So I know that you are a strategic partner for H&H Americas, and that's coming up in June. And I'd love to have you tell me more about that. I know last year was the very first trade show in the States. Tell me what's in store at H&H Americas.
Yeah, H&H Americas is super exciting. It is the trade show for the crafts industry. The goal is to unify everyone the way that Craft Industry Alliance unifies everyone as well. So it's not just quilting or just yarn or just mixed media. It's everybody. And our role in H&H Americas as an organization is twofold. One of them is in marketing. So we do help to market the show to our members to become exhibitors as well as attendees. And our second role is planning all of the education that takes place at the show. So this taps into my background as a teacher, which is great. And, you know, as part of Craft Industry Alliance, I plan webinars every month, and that's been over 7 years. So I have lots of experience in hiring teachers. And so we put together all the keynote speakers. We put together the state of the industry panelists. We have a state of the industry panel that I moderate that opens the show. And then this year there will be 4 master classes. These take place the day before the show opens. They are 2.5 hours long, and it's a deep dive with just 10 people in the room into something important to your business, like Shopify, for example. And in that class, you'll actually do the work of improving your Shopify site in that 2.5 hour class. Then there's going to be 12 business classes. So I book all the teachers. We have a committee that helps us with this, which is, they're amazing. We have a committee of over 40 people who help to brainstorm the topics that we need to have covered in a show in 2023. And then who should teach that topic? Who is the absolute best person? And so we have a faculty of 9 people. There's 12 business classes that will be offered throughout the 3 days of the show. So it's 4 classes each day. And then the final aspect, which we haven't booked yet because we have to wait to sell all the tickets. Tickets go on sale in another couple of weeks. And then we will book the main stage panel discussion. So there is a stage at H&H Americas on the show floor, which is a little different from some other trade shows in the US, but is common apparently in Germany, where H&H originated. And so there are panel discussions that happen throughout the 3 days of the show. There's no additional fee for them. They're not ticketed. You can just come and sit and listen. So we will be booking those once we know who's going to be there, because we pull from exhibitors and attendees to be on stage who have expertise in particular areas that we want to cover. So that's our role, and it's a big job to book all the
education. Sounds like it.
It's like a giant jigsaw puzzle, and then it slowly comes together piece by piece. So even when you think there's no way it's going to happen, it does eventually become clear. And so, you know, and we're learning as we go. Certainly booking speakers for in-person events are different from virtual events, and there's a learning curve, and we're also very much open to suggestions and ideas to improve it as we go. So it's definitely a work in progress, and year 2, I think, is going to be even stronger than year 1. But the show itself is really fun. I love that H&H comes from Germany, because they have a huge base in Europe and also in Asia. And so the exhibitors and attendees who come to that show they come from all over the world. And there's a beautiful international focus that I think really enhances the experience, because you're seeing products that you would not see, and you're meeting people that you would never meet. So to me, that's such a huge asset of this show in particular, is its international connections, level of connections.
And have you been to the show? And it's Cologne, correct? Is Cologne, Germany?
No, I haven't. It's been hard for me to travel for a long time because I have kids, but I do hopefully want to go. And my husband loves craft beer, so he's all for it. So I could see us going. I'll go to the show and he'll go out and have a good time. And then, so we'll see. But maybe
sounds like the perfect trip.
Yeah, he's like, let's go to Cologne.
So one thing that I know you are a bit of an expert on is creating successful email campaigns. And I believe you help others create strategies for email campaigns, correct? Email marketing campaigns.
Yeah.
Tell me how you work with people on this.
Yeah, I think email is so powerful. I think it's incredibly powerful. I think it's underused. I think a lot of people feel like, I don't want to send out emails. I'm going to be a spammer. I'm going to be bothering people. And I don't know what to say. I don't have anything to say. And so they just don't do it. I was one of those people for sure. People kept telling me you need an email list. And I was like, yeah, I have a blog. I don't need an email list. But of course, not everybody reads your blog or comes to your blog. And same thing with social media. Not everybody's on all the different social media channels, et cetera. So I really feel like email, I've seen it with my own eyes. Like email is really powerful. So my feeling about email newsletters is you can create a template that has the different blocks of content all kind of laid out for you. So if there's three or four different blocks of content, you know in advance, this is how it's going to work. There's going to be a section here that's a little letter from me. There's dozens of different ideas for sections, but you pick what's going to work for you. You make the template, put in your branding, your colors, your all your stuff, and you get it all set up so that when you do go to sit down, it's not so overwhelming. You're like, I know I need a little letter for me. And then when you're walking around and the days leading up to the day you actually have to write the newsletter, in the back of your mind, you can be like, oh, you know what? That's what I should write about in the little letter from me. You know, just like it already exists. So you know that what you need. So I think that's incredibly helpful. Don't copy and paste last newsletter. Set up a template and that way you're ready to rumble. I also think you should treat your newsletter like it is a special gift that you are making and preparing for your absolute favorite fans. For the people who really love you the most, you are going to give them a special present every time you send it out. So you don't have to worry that it's spam, because what you're putting in there is going to be something that they're going to love. And you just train them to open it. So you put something in there, you know your audience best, that they will love. And then when it's like a Pavlovian response. When they see it come into their inbox and it's from you, they're like, ooh, better open it. There's always something good in here, some little nugget that I would have missed otherwise. And I'm not talking about a coupon code for your shop. Like there's some piece of content in there that they know. You just train them that they know to open it. And there's also kind of a give and a take. If you are generous by giving those little gifts week after week, month after month for a long time, and they come to have that relationship with you where they're so grateful that you have helped them in this way for so long. When it is that you're ready to launch something, a new course, a product, whatever it might be, they will buy from you because they feel in relationship with you and they are grateful to you and they want to support you and they actually want what you have to offer. So it's just so powerful. And I think something that you absolutely shouldn't ignore.
Gift is a great way of putting it. I love that. And it actually makes me think of some of the newsletters I've subscribed to are by individual writers who they make it free, but they also would like you to be a paid subscriber. And you're right. You come to value their content so much that you want to be their paid subscriber because it is a gift. And so in your own personal life, how many emails do you feel that way about that you receive?
Oh, a lot. I'm a newsletter junkie. So I get a lot of newsletters. You know, I also think it's a good idea to subscribe. If you're on somebody, an artist's website or something, and they've got, you know, a newsletter sign up, put your email in there. See what you get. You can always unsubscribe, right? It's no hard feelings. So put your email in there. You'll see, like, sometimes people don't send anything out. And honestly, you're disappointed. You're like, I love that artist and I wish she would send something. So that's interesting. Then some people, they send too much. It's like, whoa, this is just beyond what I was expecting. Some people, it's way too long and you never read it and then feel guilty and they start like stacking up and then you have to unsubscribe because it's like, that's too much. And then some people, you know, are awesome. And it's so I always say just subscribe, sign up, subscribe, see what you get. And I don't know how many I get. I'm embarrassed to say, but it's probably upwards of 20 a week. But I, you know, I also, poor thing, Blog Lovin', which was my blog reader, seems to be dead. I used to use Google Reader, then I use Bloglovin anyway to follow blogs. And but I followed over 100 blogs on there. And anyway, for sadly, I need a new way to keep track of all my blogs because that service seems to have been neglected now. But yeah, I'm like a pretty avid media junkie, so I read a lot. And I'm in like, I don't know, 250 Facebook groups. I'm a little bit crazy, but yeah, that's, I do read a lot.
Well, something tells me that you are absolutely tapped in to just about everything going on. You know,
I mean, I am, and I've been obsessed with it for a while. So there's always something going on. I always say about the craft world that we are a microcosm of the whole world. So any social issue, political issue, religious issue, economic issue that's unfolding in the wider world unfolds within the craft industry in some way. And it's all here. And it's like a great sort of window into what's going on in the world. So yeah, for that reason, I love it.
So currently, right now, what are some key words in the craft industry? What's topical right now?
So I would say what's topical is AI for sure. You know, I think ChatGPT has made a big splash, and there's a lot of interesting uses for it from a marketing perspective, from the perspective of having to write blogs, write newsletters, write subject lines, from a research perspective as well, asking it questions, helping it to create outlines for articles, et cetera. So there's a real interesting change happening. I know Google's launching its own chatbot called Bard. ChatGPT is now going to be integrated into Bing, Microsoft's search engine. So this technology is completely different than search as we knew it. And I think it definitely impacts us. On the flip side of that, I think when it comes to AI generated art, we've got a lot to be concerned about. I think that these huge data sets that are being used to train these AI generated art bots are, you know, not asking for consent. There's no compensation. And yet the ability for users to say, I would like you to generate, name an artist piece with horses, and it will generate a new piece of art in the style of the artist you named with horses, look just like her work, because the bot was trained on all of her images without her consent. And we have huge concern about what that will mean for artists and for graphic designers in the years to come. So I think that, you know, I think, like I said, AI, it's huge for the world, and it's definitely important for the craft world as well.
Well, and how about platforms? You know, you spoke of Shopify. I know you have so much experience with Etsy. Do people come to you wanting to know where is the best place for me to sell my work?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a discussion we have in a lot of our networking events. We have an online roundtable every month. We just had it yesterday. We have a private Facebook group, like I mentioned, and people ask that kind of question all the time. And there's no one right answer. You know, I mean, it really depends on your goals, the type of products you have. Are you selling wholesale? Are you selling retail? What's your price point? What level of sophistication do you have when it comes to doing web design and development yourself? How much can you afford to outsource? I mean, there's a whole host of questions there that will determine whether you're better off on Wix or Shopify or Squarespace or WordPress. I mean, there's, you know, should you sell on Fair, on Etsy, on a marketplace like Amazon Handmade? There's just a huge number of choices now, which has been a great development. You know, I think when I first started selling products online, Etsy was a massive godsend, because in order to set up e-commerce in 2005, you had to learn how to code. I didn't know how to code. And so being able to just create a listing with their easy user interface, even though at that time, creating a listing on Etsy, there were 5 screens that you had to go through. before you could make it go live. So it wasn't easy, but it was easier than anything else. But we've seen a huge evolution in e-commerce now, and there's so many options, so many plug and play options out there. So although that can be good, and I think is good, obviously, overall, it also can be overwhelming. So it's great to have a group of people who have expertise to ask.
And are you still selling your handmade stuffed animals?
So I sell sewing patterns. I did sell handmade stuffed animals for a long time. After I wrote my second book, I shifted from selling handmade to selling patterns and specialty supplies. So that's what I sell now. I have 43 sewing patterns, most of them digital only. I have two that are in print as well as digital. And then I sell specialty supplies that you need to be able to create them. So I have a puppet pattern, and then I have puppet eyes that they're really impossible to find. I order them straight from a factory in Japan. So you can't go to Joanne and buy these specialty eyes that you need to make a really cute puppet. So I sell the eyes. I sell squeakers, I sell rattles, I sell hemostats, all kinds of things that you need to be able to make really good stuffed animals. And then I sell directions on how to make them.
And do you still make them for yourself or for friends?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I definitely do. And I still sew, but I will say it's mostly on the weekends. The nice thing about selling digital patterns is it's pretty much passive income. There's certainly customer support that has to happen for various reasons. People have questions and things like that. But so the nice thing about that business is it kind of runs in the background. And I still ship supplies every day and answer customer questions. But it's definitely taken a back seat at this point to Craft Industry Alliance as far as my work life is concerned.
So you have your own business. You are president of Craft Industry Alliance. You're gearing up for H&H Americas. I have to think that you are a very organized person.
I am an organized person. I have to say, like, I honestly, organization and time management are two of my strengths. So they just like have always sort of come naturally to me. I'm not a procrastinator. Like, I just do things. I think I'm, I have lots of lists. I use Google Calendar. I use Trello. Sitting next to me right here is my yellow legal pad and my mechanical pencil, which I cannot live without. And I think I'm just naturally an organized person. I know that that's annoying to say, but I think it's actually true.
Well, and you've probably always been that way, Abby, correct?
I think if you ask my mom, she would be like, yeah, she's just always that way.
Wow. Now, what is something about you that most people would find surprising?
Well, I also am a volunteer teacher of an English language learner. So I'm really interested in teaching people to speak English and improve their English. And so I've been volunteering for the past two years now at our local library through Wellesley English Language Learners. And so my student is actually a year younger than me, and she's from China. Her name is Tracy, and she is an interior designer. She's an incredible person. And I just feel so blessed that we were connected in this way. And she came here to our town 4 years ago, and she's actually in China right now visiting family. But she has pretty good English, so it's really improving, and she's super motivated and a very hard worker. So she's really improving her English fluency, her business English, and her written English as well, so that when she emails her daughter's teachers, she feels comfortable and confident in what she's able to write. So honestly, I've learned at least equal, if not more, from Tracy than I've taught her, but it's been a wonderful experience. And I am hoping to teach some classes to groups at our library through that same program in the years to come.
Wow, that's wonderful. Anything else about the year ahead for Craft Industry Alliance? Anything else that should be on our radar that we should be looking out for?
Yeah, sure. So we have one really fun thing coming up in the spring prior to H&H, and they're called Niche Networking Meetups. So we do them online. but we bring people together all from the same niche. So if you're a quilter and you just want to meet people who are quilters, this is your opportunity. And if you do jewelry or if you are a scrapbooker, whatever it might be, and we have 9 of them, they run through the course of a week. One of our members becomes the host, and it's just like an open discussion of what is happening in our particular niche right now. Like, what do we all need to talk about? We had in the fall, so they're now a regular part of our cadence and will be offered again in May as well as in September. And some of those groups, by the way, also have continued to meet. It's so interesting. We did them by region at one point. We did regional meetups, and our European group is meeting this week. They continue to go. So it's interesting. You know, I think that one of the roles that we can play as an organization is just to bring people together. It's not hard to do. It's not expensive in any way, but it's just simply people really would like to connect with one another and meet each other and talk to one another. And it just seems so simple, but that's a really wonderful service that we can provide because we have so many members who do so many different things. So niche networking meetings are coming up in May.
Wonderful. I'm visualizing women, but I am wondering, you must have male members of the Alliance, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was sort of an assumption, but it's a wrong assumption on my part. These are mixed groups often, correct?
Yes, absolutely. The people, all different kinds of people are certainly welcome for sure.
So I want to steal something from you, and I want to ask you if you have any recommendations to end our beautiful conversation with. It can be books, it can be products, it can be TV shows. Tell me what you recommend.
Well, there's a book called The New Hexagon by Katja Marek, which I love. And it was published by Martingale. There's actually a second one as well. And what's brilliant about this book is I think there's 100 designs in there. They're for English paper piecing, which is a type of hand sewing that you can, is very portable. You can take anywhere. And it's very easy to do. One thing about English paper piecing that I like is you don't have to cut in a straight line. I'm not good at cutting things in a straight line. So it's very free form. And the brilliant aspect of this book is she's taken all of these hexagons and divided them in all different ways. So with 2 books, it's 200 different ways that she's, I think, unless there's 50 in each book. Either way, it's a lot of ways. And so you can kind of create your own projects. So from her book, I'm Jewish, our family is Jewish. And so I've made a challah cover. And because sometimes when you divide the hexagon, it looks like a Jewish star, a Star of David with inside. So I took that template and figured out how to make a challah cover from it. And then I just finished a second one, different template, but still with the Star of David motif that is a matzah cover for Passover. So I just love this book because it's one of those books you would never give away. It's like, it's almost like a reference book because there's sort of endless ideas that you could create with these different hexagons that have been pre-divided for you. So you don't have to do any of the math or geometry, which is not my strength. So I just so appreciate the way that it's a very different approach than a project-based book where they're like, here's 20 projects. No, it's really like a reference book. And so I love The New Hexagon. I think I've gotten a bunch of different English paper piecing books over the years. And this is the one that I'm keeping for sure. So that is one recommendation that I have for people who are looking for a sewing project.
I love it. Well, it has been wonderful speaking with you today. Again, I encourage people who are not yet familiar with Craft Industry Alliance to go to your website. There is so much information. Anything else you want to leave us with today?
The one thing I would say as far as like advice is concerned is just don't give up. I think that often people feel discouraged, and definitely I feel discouraged all the time too. And it's easy to feel like, oh, you know, nobody's buying my things. Nobody's reading my stuff. But I think that just continuing to show up and be persistent and pursue things that you really enjoy, you know, people will perceive that that is your passion. And if you consistently put out something really quality, eventually You will build that audience. So yeah, just persist.
Thank you, Abby, for joining us today.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.